Welcome to my podcast. This is the first time I've legitimately tried to do a podcast outdoors like this. It's been a hot summer day in June. It's upwards of 90 degrees. So I figured, you know, it's kind of a nice day. Wanted to get some things accomplished here, and I did very little. But I am trying out something I've been working on the past week or so, which is, this is my first podcast where all of my equipment to do this recording is totally powered by solar panels. Got these panels on Amazon. They had a deal on them, and I thought, well, how wonderful is this USB connector? It pulls about 6 to 7 watts. It's supposed to pull 10. I don't see it doing that. They make a larger one. But it's a nice little portable charger that I can take anywhere pretty much with me. I found of note that it doesn't work very well when I try to run it through a window in a car for some strange reason. They said something about that you couldn't connect it to your phone if you were going through shade, changes of light, because it can cause your phone to just shut off that charge and you will wind up... I didn't quite understand if it had something to do with the way that the Samsung and Apple phones work, to where you can charge other devices through them, or how that precipitates through it. But I'm trying this very well with this solar panel. And it's working very efficiently so far. You know, I've tried it out this week. I was out and I could charge my watch, could charge my phone with it in direct sunlight in June, almost July, which is telling you that that's a very small amount of the year that you're going to be able to use something like this. In most cases, I'll probably be pulling about a watt, maybe two, trickle charge, and will be saying to myself, why did I bother getting this thing? But the reasons it is good, let's say you're hiking, you're on a through hike, let's say you're doing something like the Laurel Highlands Trail, which I would highly recommend people do the Laurel Highlands Trail if you get time and enjoy everything from Ohio Pile to up towards Johnstown, I believe it goes to Bolivar, up through Seward, I believe. And you would have this with you. You would hook it up to a battery, an external battery, on your pack, and as you're walking, it would slowly charge the battery. So, you know, you could use that. I've used it just messing around with it a little bit. I was up in the Shenandoahs the other day, and I just loved it. So as far as solar goes, as a little gimmick, we're at the beach. It does its amount that you would want it to. So I'm not going to mention the name of the brand here. There's several of them. I recommend getting something lightweight. And the neighbor's dog here is named Mario, so if you hear someone yelling Mario, we're doing this podcast outdoors, and again, just want to capture the freedom of what I've been doing here. Two topics offhand. First of all, I have my next book pretty much all geared up. It's all pretty much written, the structure of it. And as one woman on Twitter was saying about editing and everything, I commented to her, I said, you know, I hate to rewrite something twice, because I wrote this all on fountain pen on paper. And it gave me a remarkable amount of freedom to write. I didn't feel as obligated to write on a screen. There's two types of writing that you can do. And one is because of a computer, and one is because of writing on a sheet of paper. Writing on a sheet of paper, you have so many lines. So if you're writing verse, you know you're around 20 to 30 lines, which translates to about the size of a page on a regular printed bound book. If you're writing on a computer, you have an endless page that you can set up, or as I set it up, to where you never lose your train of thought. And much of what I'd written when I was younger would be sometimes 15 pages long, a verse that I kind of wonder if it's a youth thing. As I've gotten older, I've gotten more inclined to be concise in my wording, in my lines. Even the greats like Wordsworth and Shelley and I can't think of his name now. But many of the romantic writers from the 1820s died very young. You will find this with many of their writing styles and their words, that their verses go on and on for many verses. I imagine had they gotten to a older age, they would have been more concise. And writing on novels, like Jack Kerouac used a typewriter with a paper that never had an end to the page, so he never lost his train of thought. I find that efficient for novels, but when I'm writing a book, I like to have a piece of paper that I can pretty much break up the lines on. It. I know I can get to about 20 lines a page, so if I'm writing stanzas, 5 to 8, sometimes 6, break it down. If it's prose, I can go on forever with it. But writing with a fountain pen has allowed me to slow down a little bit, I think, because I type very many words per minute, but I don't write it. I don't write it. So when you slow down, you write it out. You get to go back and review it as you're writing, keeping that rhythm, slowing it down a little bit. I prefer that. But then you have to type it back up. You're sitting there with this mundane task of going over your work again, coming up with new ideas, because you always want to live in the moment. So you're reflecting what you've written. And if you're doing a reading or something to that nature, it's not so bad because you have an audience. But when you're typing it up to yourself, you don't have an audience. So it kind of psychologically messes with you a little bit. And you add, when you've had beautiful weather, you don't want to sit inside and type up something that you've written, usually in the wintertime, per se. Oh, and here's one of these little things. My father used to call these bugs angels, these little gnats. And he said, have you ever seen one? It's someone that passed on that's coming to say hi. So maybe that's somebody telling me that I'm full of shit and I should start to get into my writing and typing, you know. But what happened to me was I had two things happen to me this weekend. I went down to the Shenandoahs, and I was going to work on my book of poetry, this one is. And as I get down there, I realize Microsoft released this thing that they're coming out with a new version of Windows, and it really upset me because I spent money to invest in this Surface tablet that has a keyboard that I thought, you know, it's nice and ultralight. And I find out, as I've said in other podcasts, every time I turn the damn thing on, I wind up doing 20 minutes of updates and I'm not doing any work. And if you take every day that you do that, you're wasting 20 minutes. It sort of defeats the purpose of that product. It's good in what it does as far as typing things up, but I was not very happy with that, let me put it to you that way. So what I did is I was going to type all of these poems up. I brought them with me. I had kind of my office on the go, shall we say. And I got down there, and damn, it was just beautiful out. So I spent the whole week doing other things. And then I was in the Shenandoahs, and the person I was with lost their phone, so I wound up having to backtrack and find their phone the whole time. Running things off of this solar panel I had. I had a remarkable time. I wound up going to Stony Man, which I always visit, and climbing the skyline side of it. I loved it. And then going to Big Meadows, I actually enjoyed that a lot. I've never seen Big Meadows on a clear day like that. So it was wonderful, poetic. I had a lot more ideas, and I wound up thinking, wow, I just, instead of typing this up, I ended up adding about another 20 pages to what I wanted to put into it, because it was just so much in the moment and so spontaneous and beautiful in the way poetry should be. And it hit me in a lot of ways. It's actually the profound nature of that statement to me. And it may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but there was a podcast nearly 20 minutes long that I'd been listening to this weekend and the time preceding this, because I was looking on my phone and I happened to notice that it mentioned about John McAfee passing away. And I had not been close to John McAfee. I'd known him. I knew when he had the problems with Belize, I was a staunch supporter in him getting the story out and to be free of whatever he was dealing with. This whole thing, who is John McAfee, and you could contact and lend him whatever help you could. Legally, and I never really did a whole lot, but I supported his cause, and I helped rally a lot of other people to support his cause and get his story out there as much as I can do. I mean, I'm not going to go and work on a charity issue with a guy who's a millionaire to billionaire over his cause. It's not about the money, but to me, there's so many other issues, including at the time with veterans, mainly children with issues or people fighting diseases, that I found to be a lot more time, well, worthwhile time invested. But John was always a decent guy, and you know, he'd message you back and forth, and you always knew when you contacted John, you would get a very straightforward answer and a very wise one. It would be the kind of answer that you would get from somebody that had expanded their mind to the truth, had lived a life, had been wealthy, had had everything that you would expect to have in a life that started out in tech, very careful about privacy, all these issues, and espionage, and you know, I kind of knew he was more in tune with my brother Mark, because my brother Mark ran a he was a licensed private investigator. So there was a lot of things that overflowed between the two, and got to know him in a lot of ways through his contacts with my brother Mark. But on this podcast, it struck me incredibly about John McAfee. Because shortly after it had came out, he had been arrested in Spain. I guess he was wanted in the U.S. for tax evasion or something. I don't know. And he died in a Spanish prison rather than come to America and face what is in his later years would be a life sentence. And you look at that, and I used to always think that somebody going through a situation, how could they possibly end their life? You know, with John now and my cousin Michael Safian. I realized the wisdom and profound loss with these people that I'm glad I can't truly understand that, but I can not hold it against them as far as to disparage them. Much the same way as someone that passes away from a drug overdose. John had a point to how he lived. And in this podcast, he mentions several different things. As he does in his last post on Twitter, he says about power. He talks more about governments, but he talks about power. And he comes to this realization that power is something that if you give... He basically says there's two sides to a person. And there's the good, loving side, caring, compassionate, and then there's the darker side. And if you give anybody power over another person, they will inevitably use it to hone into the darker sides of themselves. But things like love, compassion, kindness do not have a use for things like gathering money or to have power over others, or power in any sense. And it reminds so much to me of what I have growing in this yard here. I have grapevines, I have a garden, I have rose bushes, and if I do not water them, they cannot live on sunlight. You know, what you water is what will live on it. If I give this grapevine different fertilizer than the rose bushes or what should be in this other plant, it'll kill it. In much the same way our lives are. Love being that it doesn't need power, it has no use for it, it wouldn't know what to do with it to begin with. And John went on to end that podcast saying that they asked him what his view of the world would be or what he would wish, and he just simply said that he would wish that people would know who they are and their purpose in relationship to the world. So what does that really mean? I mean, he says that if you knew that this is all there was, you would not waste 1 minute, 1 second, doing something you didn't love. So for me, I can relate to that as a writer. I don't get much joy from typing things up or reviewing the work I've written. I like to write things when I'm out somewhere, where I might take a mental note and scribble down a few lines and revisit it later and put the whole thought process together. I'm never big on editing things or trying to make it sound a certain way. I like to have things rhyme, but if I have one word that doesn't rhyme in a stanza or something, it doesn't matter to me so much as what I'm trying to say. Maybe there's a language out there somewhere where it will rhyme. My point being to all this is, this weekend, we lost a great person, John McAfee, a great man. He was a patron of so many causes. You could say, oh yeah, billionaire, millionaire, the man had philanthropy. He was somebody that gave. He gave back. He didn't have a lot towards the end, because he was not allowed to have bank accounts and all these other things. But John had something more than just money. His philanthropy and his giving also was in the wisdom. And, you know, he was a human being. He was a private person. He wasn't going around like an encyclopedia giving people wisdom. But the wisdom he gave people when you would ask him for it, you always knew it was upfront. It was truthful. It didn't have bullshit in it. John was not a bullshitter. And I wanted to do this just to honor his life and mention about how what I love doing is climbing up on the mountain, even around here, but especially Shenandoah's. Finding a quiet place, writing down my thoughts, my feelings, and my own personal expression. A photograph cannot necessarily capture that. If you read some of the things John McAfee said that was wisely, you would know too that if you're reading something Whitman wrote, or Percy Shelley, or Lord Byron, or any of these people that were wiser than you and I will ever be, that you can revisit that moment more than in some aging photo. So the words need to be written down. I will work on my book. I will get it typed up, and I will get it to my editor, and they will review it. And I don't understand why sometimes in the modern age, for these people that do make a lot more money off of a book than I do, that I have to give it to them in a digital format. I think you know, there should be a way that you could take a book in the handwritten form and somehow print it that way. It would be harder to read, but it would be more personal to have it as handwritten by the author. It would cost probably a great deal more, but I think a lot of that has been lost to digital and printed in a lot of ways, especially digital, where you have to have things where a computer screen can read it. But this book will be decent. I don't know when exactly I'm going to get it out. I have a rough deadline, but, you know, they're not going to kill me if I don't get it out. And I will put all of the money I make off of the books that I write towards charity. And it goes back to, why do I do this? You know, I had someone say to me about, I did a DNA test for somebody and found out who their birth family was, and people said how much money I could have made from that. And understandingly, exactly what John said is that, you know, what price do I put on that? I come from a place of love and compassion to what I'm doing in that point. I'm not coming from it in a sense of, wow, I could gain from this, I could make from this. The value is a lot different than the value of what you hold in your pocket. But when you do have something like a book that you write, and you're doing it out of inspiration and love, you're seeing a sunset and you're writing about it, like I am right now, talking about it. And people like what you say. It has meaning, a deeper meaning than you alone could ever express, because it catches them in a moment and they can feel an expression of it, meaning in their life. Sorry, I need some coffee here. But you have a deeper expression than you could ever express. That you're going to cash in on it? No. I take the money from my books that's overhead in my costs. Of course, I'm not going to do things at a loss, but I don't want to do them at a gain. The gain goes back towards charity and the people that I feel it's for. And then, to me, it's no longer about money. It's no longer about me doing something because it's benefiting me or thinking how much money I can make off of a book to buy some needless thing that is only going to distract me from what I enjoy doing. Maybe I'll buy a solar panel. And I'll be able to power my podcast on it. That's about it, okay? I try to live minimalist. And, you know, thinking of John, he wasn't a minimalist. He was a millionaire. He's a billionaire. But his wisdom in that moment, and he was a man that did some psychedelics too, but his wisdom was one that was profound. And I just wanted to dedicate a podcast to that message, because I don't know if people are going to hear it, but it's a message he said many times before. It wasn't just that one podcast. It's something I'd heard him repeat over and over again. This mantra of doing things from a place of love and kindness. So when you do things, do them from that sense of grounding yourself in your actions into what your purpose is. As my previous podcast, I mentioned Serena Dyer and Sedge Wayne Dyer's daughters that had written a book. It's the same concept. And I want to congratulate Sage for having her baby the other day, son, and I want to wish them well. And I'm looking at my neighbor's other dog right now, Chaos. Yes, Chaos and Havoc. Invading my podcast, Chaos and Havoc. Hey, Chaos. But these outdoor podcasts are like that. You're going to get birds, you're going to get people, you're going to get cars, you're going to get... There's a bark. All right. A mindful bark, knowing mindful bark. Anyhow, I want to thank all of you, and I want to again congratulate Sage on her new baby, and what a blessing that is. The time where she's given us all this book, her and Wayne's other daughter, to enjoy, to learn, and to grow from. That's the purpose in life, you know. I mean, looking at my writing, I went through Amazon on my first book I published because it was easier to get it out. It was a chapbook. And then I went through eventually dealing with publishers because I found I like a printed version of a book. I like dealing with an editor and a real publisher. There's book distributors and people that distribute things through Amazon and through Barnes & Noble and all that, but that's fine. But I like that printed copy I can sit down and read. And what a wonderful publisher they have. I like Hayes House has done amazing work, and with their father and them. So I'm going back to that process of writing, inspiration, and I want to thank you all for your time. Do what you love doing. Make it glorious. God bless you all.